Welcome to FemTech at Work, the podcast where we explore the intersection of technology, health, and women's empowerment in the workplace, hosted by me, Maaike Steinebach. This show will dive into the innovative solutions transforming women's health and well-being in the workplace. Join us as we chat with FemTech founders, industry leaders, and change makers who are pioneering advancements in FemTech and women's health. We discuss everything: menstrual health, reproductive rights, menopause, but also the challenges women face in the workplace and how innovation can overcome them. Whether you're a seasoned professional or just starting your FemTech journey, FemTech at Work is here to inspire and inform you about the future of health and wellness for women everywhere. Tune in and be part of the conversation. Hi, and welcome to this episode of FemTech at Work with today's amazing guest, Anke Griffiths. Anke is the co-founder of OM Health Hub, but she's also the co-author of this amazing book, Why Women Aren't Winning at Health, but Can. Welcome, Anke. I'm so excited to have you with us today.
So good to be here. I'm excited about this conversation.
Yes, and I know we have so much to talk about, so we're just going to jump straight in. I'm going to talk to you maybe about the book first. Can you just tell me a little bit just about your background and your personal journey? And then what inspired you to start OM Health Hub? Or what inspired you to write the book? I don't know what came first, the chicken or the egg.
It's true. So it's funny because I would have never written the book if I didn't launch the hub. Mm-hmm. So a little bit about my background. I'm Canadian, but I've moved out of Canada a long time ago after school. I moved to France. I was working there for 6 years. And I've been in Asia for about 13 years now. I love living here. This is where we are, where we're not going to move, hopefully, anytime soon. But in that journey, I used to work for a big retail luxury group. And I noticed, as a woman living in three different parts of the world, that different places were doing different things well when it came to women's health. And What really struck me was that we, as women, we're very engaged with our health. We do want to support our health, optimize it. We're interested in it. But what I saw was that tools that were existing in one part of the world were either not known about or inaccessible in another part of the world. So that was really why I started OM Health Hub. The idea was, where can I go to for the best and most legitimate information on women's health? Is it Cleveland Clinic for heart health? Is it University of Melbourne for brain health? Is it Hong Kong with traditional Chinese medicine and the approach that they have to supporting women's health, either through health milestones like postpartum and perimenopause and menopause? So it started with that, because I kind of looked at the market and I said, well, where do we go to find this information that we trust that is linked to what we go through in our lives, whether it's menstruation or fertility or postpartum? Where do we go for that? And I didn't see a place that was for us that really looked at that. What I saw was that most platforms were doing general health optimization, how to eat the super ingredients, how to exercise. Yeah. Now a lot more mental health, but there wasn't this platform that focused on women's health specificities. So started that. And when I brought together the community of health experts, a few things happened. One, I met my two amazing co-founders, Dr. Marjorie Jenkins and Dr. Allison McGregor, who are also the co-authors on my book. And what Dr. Jenkins and Dr. McGregor said is, this is so great because you're trying to bring something that's consumer focused. And while they had been championing women's health from inside the medical system, their frustration was, and very honestly, the frustration that I saw with almost all the health experts, was that the information that they had about women and their health was not reaching women.
Yeah.
So they were like, let's do it, because there are certain gaps that exist. But when women know what they need to do, they'll be empowered and things will move a lot quicker. So started doing that. But as I started meeting experts like endocrinologists and cardiologists and, you know, all kinds of experts that were looking at women's health, a few things came evidently clear when it came to what was happening to women's health. And we just decided that we had to write this book, Why Women Aren't Winning at Health. And so the book, Why Women Aren't Winning at Health, is really to explain to women what is happening in the medical system, in the wellness system, and also in our own minds and culturally that's kind of blocking us from engaging in a proper way with our health and getting access to the right tools. And then at the end, the very important bit is also, but can. Okay, so now that we know, what can we do about it? And that focus is in everything that we do at OM. It's good to understand something and be empowered about it, but then what are the tools that you need to kind of use for your own health as a woman? So that's why the book is there, because I really feel that unless you, as a woman, you understand the system, a few things can happen. Either you don't know how to navigate the health and wellness space, and people either experience gaslighting, you can be manipulated.
Yeah.
Or when you know a little bit about it, but without context, it can sound very bad and very scary. And we're going to discuss a bit the health gaps that exist for women. But what we wanted to do is to kind of explain all the whys behind that, because there is a reason behind it and things are changing. But I don't want women to feel desperate. There's nothing to do now. It's just bad all over. So we looked at it. Okay, let's explain it so that women understand and they can take advantage of it and advocate for themselves, and also what tools there are.
Okay, so maybe just explain to me a little bit what OM Health Hub is.
Sure. So there's a few components that no matter how OM will shift and the Health Hub, they will always remain our core values. And that's number one, the experts themselves. So
yep.
The experts that we work with are, one, at the top of their field, in the field that they're representing. So whether, again, it's heart health or postpartum or hormones or whatever field that is, traditional Chinese medicine, they went to the best universities, they have access to their latest research, and a lot of the times work clinically as well, because it's good to learn about it, but it's also good to kind of have that perspective by working with people. So that's one. And, you know, it kind of sounds like obvious, but you'd be surprised how many things that we do in regards to our health that do not come from real health experts. So, you know, the carnivore diet, for example, was launched by a podiatrist who had a Facebook group that was thriving on it. The take a thousand steps that everybody follows, that we all have on our watch, was launched by a Japanese company to just make something catchy around health. And funny enough, well, not funny enough, it's a little bit how it is when you apply one size fits all. How many steps you should take a day depends on whether you're male, female, your age, many other factors. Sarver did a study on that. So that's kind of where our health comes from. With OM, we make sure that the experts are legitimate experts in that field. But then we go a step further. And this is important in the context of what health has become today. They don't have a vested interest to push something. So they're not here to kind of vilify glucose spikes and to launch a product around it. They're not here to tell you that, you know, intermittent fasting will cure cancer, all because they have a vested interest in that program or that product working. That doesn't mean that they don't have products, books, clinics. They do. Many do. And that's okay. But there's a difference between that and pushing something in terms of health at all means. So they fit those two criteria, accredited and no vested interest in something. And the other part of it is precision health.
Mm.
What does precision health mean? It just means supporting your health where you are in your life. Are you trying to optimize your menstrual cycle? Are you going through postpartum? Are you going through fertility? Are you in midlife, in your 40s, in your 50s, perimenopause, menopause? So precision health, because we go to the very core of where are you in your life? What's happening? Are you male, female, gender? So all these factors that make a big difference in terms of how you need to support your health. So that's OM.
Yeah. So this platform basically gives corporates and individuals access to the world leading experts on health. Amazing.
That's right. So basically, those are the values that we start with. But the OM Health Hub is, okay, how can we take this and make it accessible to everybody? The best experts that talk about the best tools for them. And so what we've created is a very easy to use platform. It's like the Netflix of health. You log in and you go in and you look at what subject interests you. Is it brain health? Is it perhaps you're suffering from migraines? Is it midlife health? You can trust that the information that you see from the experts are, again, legitimate, and it's guiding you towards optimizing your health. So that's the Health Hub.
Amazing. Obviously, you have two amazing co-founders in the US who are medical doctors. But how do you find these experts globally? I think one of the challenges for a lot of startups is actually getting support from the medical community so that it gives validation and credibility to some of the work that they're doing. But you managed to get I would like to say hundreds, but you got many, yeah. many experts to work with you on this platform. How do you find them?
So look, it's in big part thanks to my co-founders who are rock stars in the health industry themselves.
Yeah.
Very highly regarded. So when we started this and they started to kind of call up health experts that they trusted, they came onto the platform a lot easier. That's one. The second part of it is that they see who else is there. And then because they see that it's a trusted platform that has great experts, that's not trying to push products, because I have to say so many of the experts at the beginning were afraid a little bit of joining because they're like, well, if you're going to launch in 6 months a protein powder, you know, or
yeah,
something, then they don't want to be associated with it. So they trust that we will do what we say in terms of legitimacy and trustworthiness of the platform. And the other thing that I've found that a lot don't do when they have, let's say, podcasts or platforms themselves, they don't look at beyond the expert. Again, are they remaining neutral in something?
Yeah.
They're looking more, oh, how big is this person in terms of their profile, their visibility? Because if you get somebody that has a big platform themselves, then you're going to grow as well. So I think it's trust. And we've been working on this for 4 years, you know, to get to where we are with the health experts. But the thing that I'm so grateful that they're putting their trust in us. But the reason a lot of people are asking me, can you localize more? As in, could you localize the content for the Hong Kong market to a certain degree? But I would do a disservice to the health information transferred. And let me explain why that is. There's today at least a 17-year gap between the time that something comes out that's new and relevant in terms of health until it's applied across the board with practitioners. And so by going to where the information is richest, we're able to get people everywhere to tap into that knowledge. And I'll give a few very concrete examples on this. Let's start with heart health, which is the number one killer of both men and women. And we've known this for over 20 years, but women experience different heart disease because our hearts are different. Our blood vessels are different.
Yeah.
Yet to this day, the way women heart disease happens and it has not really been studied meaningfully. And even when it's included in medical books, it's not included as this is how it is. It's atypical symptom, right? So the typical symptoms of heart disease are pressure in the chest, difficulty breathing,
yep,
tingling in the left arm, you know, that kind of Hollywood, they call it heart attack. That's a male heart attack, right? Women have different heart attacks. They have pain between the shoulders, gut pain, sometimes migraines, sometimes difficulty sleeping. But these are not atypical. They're just the female signs of a heart attack. Unfortunately, as this is not integrated in medical books, when women go into the emergency room with symptoms like these, they get sent home with antidepressants a lot of the times. Are you stressed? Do you have anxiety? And they get sent home. And women have a 50% more chance of dying from a heart attack than men after going to the emergency room. So all this to say, from heart disease, which is the number one killer of men and women, to filter it down to the most granular part of health, it's important to go where the health information is richest so that women know how to advocate for themselves with the right information at the right time. So that's why we go international.
Yeah. Oh my God, there's so many things to unpack here. I thought it was also super interesting to hear that women, when they arrive in the emergency room with a heart attack, they are quite often already an hour later than men because they first Googled their symptoms,
yes,
because they weren't kind of convinced that there was something wrong with them. So they already lose an hour before even make it to the emergency room. But the other interesting thing is that also I don't think women know that actually the number one killer of women is cardiovascular disease,
yeah,
right? Because there are so many societal kind of expectations or information that we basically get that might be different, right? If you look at government-funded programs around breast cancer, cervical cancer, that's just the tip of the iceberg, right? So in your own words, what are kind of the most significant challenges that women face today around their health?
Oh, wow. That's a lot. Okay. Here's the thing. Things are shifting from the inside. Not fast enough, but there's a lot to be done. We need to start with that. And there's so many that are working tirelessly. Like yourself, there's a whole femtech that's coming up with the most incredible products to support women in their health. That's great. But there's still many barriers when it comes to women's health. And it's not only a matter of products where it's a product. And unfortunately, it's also what has happened because women have been told since the beginning of time that, you know, our bodies are weak, our body, we're emotional, we're hormonal, we're hysterical, we're, So because of that, we almost have internalized this fear of showing that any weakness. And because of that, that I think that's a huge barrier of us even adapting many of the products that are out there because we're afraid that will prove that somehow we're weaker. But it's not that at all. So let's start with the medical system. And this outline, it's like chapter one of the book, the medical system. Unfortunately, the medical system has studied male bodies and applied it to the whole population. This means including women. So that means that the medicine that has been developed has not been studied appropriately on women. Diseases have not been studied appropriately on women. And there was this belief that, well, we don't actually need to because men and women are the same. You know, we have a heart, we have digestion, we have a brain, with the exception of our reproductive organs. But guess what? We are different down to every cell of our body. And so where our brains are different, our digestion is different, everything is different, right? So what is happening is that, again, like with heart disease, we understand it very well for men and we understand it afterwards for women. So after medicine is released on the market, we see how women's bodies are impacted by it, which is why it's up to almost, I think, 80% that the medicine is pulled off of the market is because it has negative side effects in women, right?
Yeah.
And again, when I say this, it sounds awful. And in many ways, of course, it is. But just you understanding that as a woman, I think will go a long way in making you feel like you're not going crazy inside your head if something is happening. Because if something is happening and you're not getting the care you need or you're not feeling well on the medication, you understand that the system is this way and you feel empowered to question it and to challenge it until you reach a point where you feel that you're getting the care you need.
Get the answer to or the care you need.
And I think this is what has happened in menopause space for a long time. Because it has been taboo, women did not talk about it. And all the symptoms that they were experiencing, they felt like they would go in, the doctors wouldn't be trained on menopause. And then they would say, oh, it's just in your head, or it's just how it is at this time in your life. You know, it's just aging, right? And the thing that frustrates me, I would say now that we're getting more focus on women's health and more tools on women's health, there's almost this service that's being done to women's health. And this is where we see it so layered. So we went from no tools that are appropriately done for women's bodies to focusing on this is how women are suffering in their health. We're really focusing on this now. This is how they're struggling through perimenopause, through menopause, through all of these. And only by saying this, it kind of seems like women's bodies are weaker and do need extra care. Mm-hmm. But I feel like this conversation, anytime we say that, is we are here because the tools that we have for our health are not appropriate. Okay, let's go with that first. We have different bodies than men. The tools that we have are not appropriate for our health. And yes, we are struggling along the way. That needs to be pointed out first before we talk about all the different ways that women are sometimes struggling with their health.
Yeah.
One, the tools. Two, women themselves and, you know, what fighting to try to not, I would say, make the cliches true.
Yeah.
And lastly, unfortunately, there is a whole wellness system that takes advantage of women's pain points to sell them products. Mm. And it's not regulated. They spend a lot of money to know how to market to women products that, unfortunately, most of the time do not benefit our health. And that's the whole act against us, like I would say.
Yeah. And I think that has a lot to do, obviously, with social media and influencers and the ability for anybody to kind of share any kind of information, right?
Yeah.
But I just want to come back to what you pointed out earlier about the labeling of women. So this podcast is called Femtech at Work because I want to showcase the founders, but also because I very strongly feel that if we want to make change, we also obviously need to educate the women, but we also need to use the space where women spend a lot of time, which is the workplace, to kind of give them a better experience. Mm-hmm. And I noticed there that when I first started on this journey, a lot of women were like, please, please, please don't talk about menopause in the workplace, because then we will get another label on our forehead. Yes. Like, okay, this is another reason not to promote a woman.
Yeah.
But I think you and I both agree that actually we should be talking more about this in the workplace. Mm-hmm. So obviously also OM Health Hub and the work that you do with the experts on educating and doing workshops in the workplace is going really well.
Yeah.
What advice would you have for corporates that want to do more for women in the workplace? Where to start? Because there are so many issues. How to do it in a way that everybody benefits from it, not just the women, but also the leadership and the men in the organization, and it becomes something that is normalized.
Mm-hmm. Interestingly enough, so again, both you and I and many of the other founders that you're going to feature on this podcast, I think the listeners need to understand that we only want the best for women. We want women to thrive. And we just have this, I would say, advantage of seeing things a little bit from a bird's eye view. So we see what's happening in the market and we really want to empower women with this information. This is the only reason why we are doing this. So what's happening in the corporate space is interesting because, again, like with women's health, it could be like a double-edged sword where you're trying to do your something that's great, but it comes out in a different way. So I think it's important for corporates when they want to support women in the workplace to take, I would say, again, a precision health approach to health, right? So let's take a look at something like postpartum. Postpartum is super important to go through in a way where you're cared for, you understand how your body heals, what tools you have to optimize your health, because how you heal during postpartum, both physically and mentally, will dictate how you are for many, many years to follow. And we want women to come back into the workforce and be strong and be able to kind of equally, if they choose to have that family life, but also be able to integrate the workplace in a good way. Postpartum support is important, but just like you're supporting a woman in postpartum, 1 in 9 men will experience postpartum depression as new fathers. So with health, I think a precision health approach, as in, how can I support my employees in the milestones that they're going through? We're taking a look at postpartum. To not support a woman during her postpartum phase, you will get an employee that comes back to work and is not in optimal health, mentally, physically. You support a woman during that time, you get an employee back that's coming back that is not only strong, but is also grateful and loyal to the company for the support that they received during that time. Men as well. Again, because postpartum depression in men is very different to postpartum depression in women. It has different symptoms and they need different tools for support. And just in terms of visibility of how it sounds to say we support women during postpartum, only women. Again, it kind of sounds like you're focusing on a part of health that's a bit weaker when it's actually the opposite of that. In the same way with menopause in the workplace. Let's start with menopause and the challenges that women go through it. Again, I need to point out that they're going through this because there has not been research been put into this subject because it's a women's specific subject. It's a subject that most, even though 100% of women will go through, most GPs are not trained on it, right? So women do not find the right support when they go through the health system. So yes, some are struggling, not all. Some will struggle through it because it's midlife and because they're aging. But guess what? Men age as well. And if you look at the way men age, you can look at the fact that their brains are at their peak ability at 35 and will start to deteriorate and they need support in specific ways. So I think, again, let's not only say like, look how women are struggling in midlife and beyond. Everybody's struggling in midlife and beyond because we're aging. It's aging, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So we want to get people healthy and be healthy in mind and in body.
Yeah.
So I think this approach of dual support, and I think where companies need to even, let's say they can start to take a look at that. How am I supporting my employees? And I know a lot of the times women have brought this up, like, look, you're supporting your male employees with vasectomies, yet what do you offer for women on that side? So I think it needs to be a balanced approach in terms of tools offered for men and women.
Yeah, I could not agree more. And I think it's some things that I also hear back from people in the workplace. Like, yeah, if we only focus on the women, what do we do about men? But to your point, it's not about leaving anybody behind. It's about making sure that everybody can be their whole self and can thrive in the workplace.
Yeah.
However, with the lack of education from an early age, I think we end up with having certain issues in the workplace that could be prevented for both men and women if we started a lot of that awareness way earlier, right? So I'm very curious. I love your platform. I think it's extremely informative and particularly the breadth of the topics that are on there, like first-time parenting to I have migraines to, you know, really, really wide. So what are the most popular, if you look at Asia, what are kind of the most popular posts people watch and people are interested in? And do you actually measure that and use that data in a way?
Sure, we do. Look, it's interesting because by offering, and we're growing all the time, we're adding more subjects all the time. But by having this holistic approach to health, you can kind of see where the interests are in people's health. You can also go to health subjects that people might not be talking about, but it has a big impact on their health. Sexual health.
Yeah.
Right? When you look at sexual health, the World Health Organization said that sexual health is integral to our overall health, right? And again, here, men and women are very different in the needs that they have. But these are some of the subjects that are the most widely looked at. And when you see the numbers, clearly there's a need. So things like up to 50% of women will experience loss of sexual desire. There's pain with intercourse.
Yeah.
There's a super interesting session on that as well. And it's just kind of understanding that, A, this is a factor that impacts your health. And B, here's why it's happening. And C, here's what you can do about it. So you don't have to suffer with it, right? This does not need to be your new reality. So I think a lot of the more taboo subjects are, you know, it can seem quite obvious, but they're the most watched.
But that's amazing, right? Because sometimes I hear from HR managers, oh, but this is not a topic in our organization because we never get asked about it. Or an insurer, we don't get questions about these products being insured. But obviously, if there is a stigma and taboo on it, the way that you have kind of anonymized and created a privacy setting where people can actually learn and get educated, I think it's super important. Yeah. And it comes back to my very firm belief that actually using technology for these kind of things can really democratize the health and well-being of people because it gives them access that they previously never had access to or were shameful about getting access to.
That's right.
So that's super important. And it makes sense. I mean, if you're not happy in your relationship or you're not happy in your body, it's going to affect your mental health. Mm. But if you're not in a mentally solid state, it's going to affect your physical health. And even research is showing that it affects your financial well-being and your ability to kind of make sound financial decisions. So there is a clear overlap. And obviously all three or all four of these pillars, so mental, physical, sexual, and financial, come back into the workplace. Because if your employee is selling certain products or giving advice, you want them to be in peak health themselves.
Yeah. But this is why our program is called Employee Health from the Head Down. And what I really try to communicate to companies is every part of health will contribute to mental health because there's great that has increased focus on this and we're destigmatizing it along the way. And that's fantastic. But you need to look at overall health. And again, going back to, we never look at health in a, okay, what's buzzy right now? Mm. We look at health in terms of what's needed. And when you see that 20% of the global population suffers from IBS, gut issues, gut pain, that is so often dismissed by doctors, that is not understood by most experts in terms of how do you kind of support it and how do you heal it. What we went and we were working with the best IBS experts, from a clinical pharmacist that came in on a program to explain what is IBS and how you can heal it with probiotics. Another expert that wrote a book on IBS and how you can break that cycle of pain. But what each of them will say is people are dismissed when they come in with this pain. They're ashamed of it. So most of them will not talk about it. But when you look at the impact that it has on their lives, it impacts every part of their well-being, from productivity. Mm. And the numbers are striking, right? Productivity to family life, all the way up to as serious as thinking about suicide. And this is a condition that nobody really thinks about, but gut health, super important.
Yep.
And then again, we can go on for hours in terms of how every little bit of health impacts everything. But I think, again, that's the specificity of having a platform that approaches health from all different perspectives so people can come in on where their needs are.
Yeah, exactly. So what has been the feedback from employers and from users about the platform if they have been using it?
Interestingly enough, the best feedback that we've had, and this is, I think, to me, the feedback that I really want to get, is from people in, I would say, the business side of the business. So not so much human resources, not so much DEI, interestingly enough, but the people using the platform have been saying that they're engaging with it and has completely changed their lives in specific health matters like migraines, like gut health, sleep health. as well.
Yeah.
And so they love it. They find a lot of value in it. And the thing that we try to do is to really look at engagement with the platform. And because to me, if you have a product and nobody uses it, then quite frankly, it's not doing anything, right?
Yeah.
And because as we launched it about 5 months ago, what I'm telling companies is, look, let's work together on bringing your employees on the hub. And I'm happy to offer 6 months employees using it for free. So we can look at the engagement that comes with it. We can look at the rest. Now, my background is study, so I know how people measure things and things can be measured eventually. But when it comes to health, we can't tell that in the first 6 months, right? We can't even tell that in the first year. We would need to be able to compare year on year. And that's if they're already like holding on to certain data that we could track, but most companies are not doing that. So I would say the plus side to the hub is how much people appreciate it and how much people engage with it. I would say my challenge right now is to function in a space that needs numbers, right?
Yeah.
How much are you going to improve the physical health of my employees? Who can tell that?
Yeah.
And I'm going to say something that might be a little bit controversial, but there have been studies done by external University of Chicago and others to look at, out of the billions of dollars that have been invested in employee health, have employees been healthier? And the answer is no. And the reason why they gave that is, again, because I built OM with that in mind, is for number one, that when companies bring in platforms like mental health, like physical health, it's only the employees that were predispositioned to be like that that are using it. So the ones that were aware of the importance of mindfulness, that are doing more mindful things, the ones that were already kind of fit and moving, that are using the gyms. So those ones are incrementally better, but all overall, the health of the employees has not been elevated. That's number one. And number two, and this is where I would love companies in Hong Kong to be a little bit more daring. Take a look at what you have now and genuinely ask yourself if employees are using it and enjoying it. And if you see that they're not, you can have that discussion with your providers. But I find that many are continuing with what has been done because it's been done for a long time, or my insurance already covers wellness without even kind of thinking, what does it cover? Are my employees actually using it? Is that supporting genuinely their health? And if they're not, to try us to see how it is when you kind of support employees where they are in their health. So I would say, as with any startup, we're facing a lot of challenges, and those are our challenges today.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that. Yeah, I recognize particularly the EAP, so the Employee Assistance Program, which is like a helpline that they can call for mental health and well-being. The reality is employees rarely use it because they feel very uncomfortable and they worry that their employees share their data. And I've been advocating for a long time to say, why don't you cover mental health support under the insurance policy? Because then at least people can go and talk to a psychiatrist and they can talk about whatever they want, or a psychologist, but they don't have to do it kind of what they feel might be a recorded line. So I love how you're also thinking about that, as well as the measurability, because obviously that is how a lot of HR teams are driven in terms of KPIs. So looking at the ROI of some of these investments. We're almost at the end of this podcast already. I can't believe it. I have to come back to you for a part two. But what kind of changes do you hope to see in the landscape of women's health in the next 5 to 10 years? And where do you see OM in that space? What kind of role would you like it to play?
So for me, OM is the place where you come to find the best understanding of your health and the best tools for your health. I think for both women and also men, we don't have time to waste. And I want OM to be the place that features all of the amazing tech that's coming out, the amazing experts that are working on incredible ideas and tools in health. So that's what OM will always be. Now, how we kind of evolve, I'm happy to evolve with only one thing in mind, is how can we humanize health as much as possible? And by that, I mean, how do we make it engaging, accessible, personalized? And tech is coming up with incredible ways to do that. And that's always going to be my focus, personalization and finding a space where you find the tools that you need for your health. I think women's health has a lot of gaps to fill. And we're seeing a lot of new, incredible businesses being founded by women and also men coming up in this space. And it's almost like sometimes we're jumping steps, and it's great to see that like things have not shifted for a long time and we're going from here. But what I've seen in health before that has happened, and it's a little bit where we are today, before we start working on optimization of micro details, we need to have the building blocks of our health in place. We need to be preventing osteoporosis, preventing heart disease, Alzheimer's and dementia predicted to increase so much. And all of these are highly preventable. We need to put those amazing building blocks for our health in place. When we're struggling, we need to figure out the best tools and then optimization, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's where I think, I hope it's going.
And just to clarify, because we spoke a lot about Hong Kong, but obviously your product is available globally and is available for any kind of corporate or insurer or partner that wants to work with you on this. Maybe just, I have two more questions. So you obviously have two US co-founders. You're here. When you look at a global approach to health, kind of what differences are you seeing maybe more from a Western and an Asian perspective to health? There are any differences.
I think the gaps that exist everywhere. That's for sure. I think, interestingly enough, as much as culture matters, taboo is taboo in terms of women's health everywhere. It's taboo in different ways, but it's still taboo. Misinformation is happening in different ways everywhere. So I think there's more that unites us when it comes to this than that separates us. The thing that I think is exciting with health is that we can function globally. And this is why there's things that are being built across the world. We need to look at those best case practices and move faster on it. And as you said, our main market is US, but I think there's an energy in Asia. It's incredibly dynamic. Things are moving so fast. I wish there was a bit more of a daring aspect when it came to women's health here. Mm. But I feel like when it will start, it will go so fast and it will be so exciting as well. It just feels like we need to kind of light the fire a little bit more here.
Yes, exactly. But I think you're doing an amazing job. I really hope a lot of people are reading your book because it has so many gems on insights, just, you know, some of the facts around the gender health gap, but also some really good advice around what women can be doing about their own health and well-being. So obviously you wrote this amazing book and it's for sale, and we'll put all the details in the show notes. But is there any other kind of book that you've been reading recently or that you could recommend to our readers as a final kind of share?
Sure. There's a book that I'm reading right now from one of the experts that is going to be joining the platform called The Mind-Gut Connection by Dr. Mayer. And he is one of the experts that has explored in depth the impact that our gut health has on brain health and vice versa.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because we all somehow know it because we hear it so much.
Yeah.
But when you read it in this book, I can tell you that I've been in this field for 4 years and it's still blowing my mind what I'm understanding from it. So this is definitely one. And another one, if you're interested in more femtech, in the field of femtech, there's been a great book that has just been released. Is it The Business of Vagina?
No, The Vagina Business by Marina Gerner. Yes.
The Vagina Business. That's it.
Very, very good.
So that's a fantastic book as well.
Yeah.
It's like an exploration of what's happening in femtech right now. So if anybody's interested in this space, I recommend that. So the two books.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Anca. I could go on forever. I'm pretty sure there's going to be a part two of the podcast in the next few months. But thank you so much for joining, sharing your wisdom.
Anytime.
And thank you for everything that you do for women's health. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you, Micah, for what you're doing. I just want to kind of end it by saying I've learned from you something that I, as a founder, I hadn't really integrated until you came in the space, which is the importance of collaboration between all kinds of health startups, I would say, and companies and startups, just collaboration in general. There's this almost like, again, as a founder, a bit of a fear that you have when you're interacting with others in that, will they try to copy me? Will they try to kind of take business from me? And everybody is doing things in their own ways. And to this day, only gained from taking a collaborative approach to speaking to somebody, to interacting with them, to reaching out. So I think us as founders that are listening to this, we should kind of reach out to each other more and have that collaboration, I would say, philosophy.
Yeah, thank you so much for saying that, because I obviously, like you were mentioning, I have the benefit of, you have the benefit of perspective, or I have the benefit of having, you know, 25 years of corporate experience. And I've seen how the collaboration evolved kind of from a competition in the fintech space to a full-on collaboration where both parties actually recognize each other's strengths and build on that. So my aim with Femtech is to kind of close that gap. It took fintech and providers about 5 years to kind of recognize that the future was around collaboration. So I'm just hoping we can do that a bit quicker in Femtech, because I very strongly feel that is how we're going to have the biggest impact collectively through collaboration.
Yeah, agree.
So thank you for that. Thank you for being here today. And thank you for everything that you do.
Thank you.